Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. Follow me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. I'm the managing editor of The Texans Wire, which you can find at texanswire.usatoday.com. And John Crumpler, what should folks do with texanswire.usatoday.com?
They should make the Texans Wire their homepage. And while they're at it, they should make another tab. And you can follow me on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. Am I the lead analyst now, Mark? Is that the title that we've settled on?
Yes.
Yes, I'm the lead analyst at the Texans Wire. And Mark and I are going to be bringing you a ton of great coverage as Texans camp kicks off tomorrow.
Yeah, I can't wait for it, particularly because it's like the last training camp to kick off tomorrow. And it's been agonizing because you get the teams that are in the Hall of Fame game and their training camp start about a week or two earlier. And hey, you know, that's part of the deal. But to have this, I mean, it's near the end of the week and they're finally opening camp. Everybody else has been going and it's been torturous for me because I've had to look at the USA Today Sports NFL Wire's internal communications, and everybody else is just having fun and posting stuff and breaking news and all this stuff. And I'm like, I got the pup list here.
Yeah, Mark, it's wrong. All the other camps, we're seeing highlights. We've got interceptions. We've got touchdowns. We know who's starting. And then we've been left out to dry.
Yeah, but I think that's also part of just the way that this offseason has gone is just anticipation. So it just figures that they would continue to build the anticipation because I think that's what the 2022 Texans have going for them is a lot of anticipation. Because once that final product hits, man, I think the expectation, you know, all the excitement and everything could quickly fade.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily wrong that the allure of the product and the hype behind the product being, of course, the team we're going to field in the regular season, might be a lot better than the actual team that's out there. But I will say that's part of the fun of being a rebuilding team is the storylines. It blinds you to the incoming pain and the reality that part of rebuilding is losing a lot of games. Very similar to the Rockets right now.
Yeah, and we'll get into the prognosis of the 2022 Texans later on in the podcast. But I want to talk about a big storyline from last week, and that's the leukemia diagnosis for receiver John Metchie. The second rounder from Alabama, he's more than likely out for the year. It's, not really possible that he's going to have an Andre Howell type of comeback. Just, you know, take your treatments and then, hey, we'll see you in October. But nevertheless, for Metchie, I just, you know, cancer's a big deal, but it's just so disappointing to see him try to recover from this ACL injury that occurred late in his college season and then have the rug pulled out from under him about, you know, 2 weeks before training camp when he can finally integrate into the pros and then just get his career back on track. And he goes from recovering from a significant injury to now fighting a significant illness.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the news on, I guess that would have been Monday or Tuesday, my heart just broke for John. I cannot imagine just the mental struggle of a young person who, I mean, if we go back 8 months, John Metchie was one of the best wide receivers in college football. It looked like his team was on track to win a national championship and he would be a first round pick. And first you have this ACL tear and that takes football from you. And you know, credit to John Metchie. He busted his ass. He still got picked incredibly high by the Texans. He got his contract, and he would have been ready to be back early for Houston. And then to have this diagnosis that takes more than football, it really puts your life on pause. And I really am confident that he's going to be okay. He's going to get excellent treatment in Houston. But, God, my heart just it ached for him on earlier this week.
Yeah, because you figured that he was going to have a fair shot. And everybody talked about how many yards he might get, what's a realistic season for him. And I don't know about you, but I thought he was going to do better than Nico Collins' rookie year. I thought he was going to have a little more stability than that.
Oh, for sure.
And instead, it's just he gets blindsided by this. So it's not even that he's going to be around the team and maybe, you know, just do your rehab a little more and a little more good luck and we'll see him in November. And no, he's done. So now the Metchie storyline doesn't even get a chance to they don't even get a chance to take, you know, see what he's got until 2023. And and then on top of that, he's fighting cancer nevertheless, albeit it's treatable. John did a great article on Texans Wire about understanding the type of leukemia that John Metchie has, but still, yep. It's just there's this asset that is still just untapped.
Yeah, and I mean, well, I'll talk about the football, but it is tough that he probably would have been one of the top three or four most interesting storylines on the football team. Certainly, he was going to play a huge part in the development of Davis Mills, kind of being that slot receiver to find pockets in the defense and just sit and then be explosive after the catch. I agree. I think he would have had a stronger season than Nico Collins. I think that the front office had really high expectations for him when they traded up. Frankly, they overpaid to go get the 44th pick and make sure that John Metchie would be a Houston Texan. And instead of getting to track that storyline and see, okay, what does he do for this football team? What does his career look like? What does he do for others on offense? It comes to this horrifying, really a gut-wrenching stop that he's missing the season. It has nothing to do with football. It has to do with something that's so much scarier than football. And then just from a health thing, it's so hard to hear because even if it is extremely curable, I mean – Mark, I wouldn't want to – if I told you that you had a diagnosis that 9 out of 10, it sounds good, but 1 out of 10, 10%, I that's so hard. Like I said, I think he's going to beat it, but I hurt for John. I'm going to plug this while we're talking about him. Listeners, one of the best things you can do for leukemia patients, it is a cancer of the blood in the bone marrow. The bone marrow is responsible for making – the precursors to your red blood cells, which carry oxygen, and your white blood cells, which help your immune system fight off infections. So because that's where the cancer is, they're going to have to kill some of the cells in there. Patients like John Metchie, they need a lot of blood transfusions. So something we can all be doing this week is going to donate blood. And it's a huge help to patients with leukemia and lymphomas.
Yeah, and look, I don't like to talk about it because in some regard, you know, it's kind of like if you're a national championship winner from college and, you know, you're in the pros. I mean, no one wants to be Al Bundy and keep talking about the four touchdowns from Polkai. But as a cancer survivor, yes, the blood transfusions, I never realized how many of them I needed. I never realized how pivotal they were because when people talk about cancer, they talk about, well, you need the surgery, you need the chemotherapy, and you need the radiation. The blood products really never gets talked about how many blood transfusions you need. So definitely, if you can do it, you need to consider just donating blood because it really is a lifesaver.
Mark, would you... Would you feel comfortable telling our audience at all about
your
experience?
Yeah, I had Burkitt's lymphoma type B when I was 17, diagnosed January 2nd, 2005, and it's the fastest growing, or at least it was back then. You could probably tell me if there's a faster one now, but it's the fastest growing cancer on the books, but because it is so fast growing, that's what made it very treatable, even when they found it in stage four, as they did in my case, because it responds well to chemotherapy. As a matter of fact, I mean, they gave me in the hospital, and they finally got their hands on it and so forth, but they hadn't yet diagnosed it. They knew it was a cancer, but they gave me steroids, and dexamethasone, I believe, and prednisone, and those were starting to kill it. And I had a 2-pound tumor on my right hip and some others up and down my spine, but it was killing it because it was so fast growing, it responded well to aggressive treatments like chemo and so forth. So that's why. And I actually took the drug that Andre Hal took with his. He had Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mine was technically a non-Hodgkin's. So he took Rituxan. And I was in, they gave me Rituxan. It was still, I think, in clinical trials in 05. So my results weren't included in the clinical trial.
Is that rituximab? Is that rituximab? Is that what the
brand
name is?
It might be. I haven't followed it. I only knew it by Rituxan. Yeah.
It is. Oh, okay. I love when my school things come
together. Yeah, isn't it cool? And then Andre Hal took a whole bunch of vitamin C, too, which I found interesting. Obviously, he was doing it intravenously. He wasn't just popping emergency gummies. So, that's how far we've come in 17 years is to where, I got to tell you, when I was diagnosed, people thought I was a goner, and it was probably because I was stage four and looked like hell and had lost 25 pounds at that point. But still, in 05 even, it was like, it's a death cell. We're so scared because my grandparents and my parents and their acquaintances and everybody were habituated to the 1980s where, if you get diagnosed with cancer, you die. And so that's why it's encouraging to see, even almost 20 years later, something like John Metchie, we're just looking at it as a big career setback, a delay with the mortal threat, not a big mortal threat. And John Metchie's, gotta get the coin for the river Styx.
Medicine is amazing in that way, and it's pretty awesome that, as sobering and as sad as it is, Mechie's going to be a survivor. And Mark, I'm so glad you're a survivor and that we can do that. I'm sorry, the audience. I know this isn't football talk, but some things are a little bigger than football, aren't
they? Yeah, they are. And, that's why I think Mechie, from what we know from talking with the Alabama team football doctor and all the deep dive that we did with Mechie, just his story, he's got the just mental fortitude and the grit to overcome something like this. And when he does, it's just going to add more to the origin story of the great career that everyone hopes he has.
Yeah, and I mean, the amazing part is football probably saved his life here. I mean, when else are you getting blood drawn as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old? So prayers for John Metchie, and there are definitely bigger things ahead for him than this.
For sure. But as he's fighting cancer in 2022, the Houston Texans are fighting to win more than four games. But Nate Davis from USA Today, he wrote his predictions this week. He released them. Houston is expected to win just three games. And the reason for that, he said, was just because, well, Davis Mills has no one around him. I mean, maybe, but three games? They won four with Tyrod Taylor. One in one game where he was actually, oh, hey, Buffalo Bills, Tyrod Taylor. And then another game where, oh, look, the Tennessee Titans are really Tannehilling. And then Davis Mills delivered them to two other victories and almost got the Titans in week 18. So I don't know. Are you buying this?
No, I'm probably not buying it. I mean, I think there's some caveats to the four wins last year. For example, is Jacksonville going to be a dumpster fire again? But even if they're not, I don't think they're losing two games to Jacksonville. And I really think there's sound reason to believe on both sides of the football, the Houston Texans should be vastly improved. Schematically on offense, they're going to look like a different team under Pep Hamilton and having both continuity and more talent at the quarterback position with Davis Mills. And then on defense, there's just more talent this year than last year. So three wins, especially when you're playing teams like, I know we've got Chicago this year. I'm trying to think what other games we have on the schedule. We have the AFC East, right?
No, Houston has the AFC West.
Do we play the Jets this year? Did I dream that?
No, the same place finishers, the Dolphins, back at Hard Rock Stadium. So kind of another scene of the crime type game, kind of like they have.
I just cannot at this point in time call them a three-win team. I can't pick out the wins in my brain right now, but I agree with you that the talent deficits, there's still a lot of veterans on this roster. Like, they're not going to get run over. And the matter of fact is, I think Lovie Smith's a good head coach. He's the right coach for this team. I was just, Jordan and I were just talking to Aaron Wilson, and Aaron said people around the building, they love Lovie's energy. He described that as an old swagger. And I think they're going to play really hard for him. And then I think Pep's got a chance to really use his mind to create a run game. And I think that's when you're going to see additions like Kenyon Green with the new scheme play some huge dividends. So, no, I think they'll win more than three games.
Yeah, here's how they win three games. And I hate to say it because I don't want to manifest anything like this. So I'm not manifesting it, folks. But here's how you win three games is Davis Mills gets hurt. That's number one, because then you're playing Kyle Allen, Kevin Hogan, Jeff Driscoll, the guy off the street. And then you've got no quarterback play. So I think that's how it happens. Another scenario is where Lovie Smith just decides, like by October, you know what? We tried this new variation of the Tampa 2, and it's not working, and we're getting burned and can't get pressure. So we're going back to the old days of 2000, and we're running that. And then that happens, and then the offense isn't able to keep up. I just think when you go roster against roster, yeah, I don't think that they're going to be able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think they're going to be able to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. But if you're talking about roster versus roster, them and the Chicago Bears in week three at Soldier Field, where it's not going to be awful and elements are not going to be an issue, how could they be at a disadvantage? When you're talking about them versus the Cleveland Browns in December, how are they going to be at a disadvantage? When you talk about them versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, that's at least a game. When you talk about them against Washington or New York, and Washington comes to NRG Stadium, I mean, that's four wins right there. So I just don't understand. It would have to, again, be injuries or Lovie Smith saying, we tried, it's not going to work, and we're going back to the old days. That's the only way something like this happens, where they get 3 wins. But even last year, like I said, the quarterback play was bad, but there were injuries and availability across the roster too, not just at quarterback. And they found a way to win 4 games.
And that's the thing about the NFL that is pretty different from the other sports leagues. Maybe it's kind of like baseball in this way that, yeah, on paper, I'm probably not taking the Texans to win any games because I would generally say they have a worse roster than all of their opponents that they're going to play this year. But the games are not played on paper. It is a sport where hard work wins, and it's a grueling long season. When you account for injuries, the fact that the Texans aren't going to be a playoff team, and there are going to be some playoff teams who come to Houston expecting a cakewalk, or that they didn't prepare because they're looking ahead to the next week, or they tried too hard the week before, and it's going to be a tough game. This team might not be very good, but they might be like my high school team where it is just hard to beat them and boring because they are physical. They run the football. They limit your time of possession. They're intricate schematically with some of the pieces they can use, like a Jalen Petrie, like a Christian Harris. And that's going to yield itself to wins naturally. It might not be a lot, but I think it'll be more than 3.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the Los Angeles Chargers ran into last year, was they were a playoff team and they needed a win and they couldn't buy a win against Houston in week 16. And I think that they might be the perfect type of spoiler team once you get into December, where if you're a contender that's trying to stay alive and you need a win, but you're beat up, and then you're going against, like I said, this tough, gritty team that's not talented but has good cohesion and fundamentals. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to come up with a W in a scenario like that. And then that's where I think Houston could pick up another win. So that's why when I look at just paper, I don't see a 3-win team. I think last year I would buy that was a 3-win team, but not, I don't buy that with this
team is more team talented because, and they're going to be better coached.
Yeah. I mean, that 21 team was the result of not having a first round pick for the past 2 drafts, and you got gutted in 21 with a second round pick. So you're not even picking till pick 67 in round 3. Okay. Of course, you're going to be horrible. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think that, because you're telling me by week 15, Kenyon Green is not going to be better than he was in week 1. And now you're talking about him as one of the anchors of the offensive line. I think
It's the team, the roster is better, and the coaching should be better. And that gives itself to wins. So I think we're on the exact same page here, Mark.
Yeah, and so that's why when we get to camp and then you got the battles going on, you got different camp battles. Which one do you want to see out of all of
them? That's a tough question. I think that I'm going to most closely be watching the running back battle, because you can make a really good argument for all 3 guys that they've got a chance to start and why they might. I think Rex Burkhead really did more than he's been asked to at a professional level in a long time last year. And he did a great job with the role. He embodies the kind of professionalism that they want to see. He knows the playbook, and he's reliable. Meanwhile, Marlon Mack has had the most success as a runner. He's the new guy. They brought him in. And you could argue he might have the most talent of the group. We'll see what that really looks like off the Achilles tear. And then Damian Pierce, the talent argument reigns here. But gosh, he has flashed some crazy potential at Florida. He looks like he'll be the best pass blocker of the group. And he's a bulldozer. So I see 3 guys who none of them appear to be substantially better than the other. and they're going to duke it out to who can get the bulk of the work at running backs. And I think it'll be a true committee, but if someone pulls away, that it probably will not be, Burkhead will not pull away, but if Marlon Mack or Damian Pierce could pull away with the job and really establish themselves as the kind of guy who's going to be the bell cow for this offense, that would bode extremely well for how Pep Hamilton's going to be able to run his scheme.
Yeah, and, you know, running back, well, you took mine, because, I mean, I think that's everybody's, really, is running back, because that's where, because it's Damian Pierce. People have been longing for that type. They wanted it out of Deontay Foreman, let's be honest, was that bruising type of running back, a punisher, and so now they finally get a chance to have one after 5 years, and you've got old guys, Rex Burkhead, you got the Reclamation Project, and Marlon Mack. Like I said, that is what everybody's looking at, and you know, it's going to be a lot of fun to see. Do you think there's any chance Damian Pierce emerges from camp as the feature back? Do you think he can do it by the end of camp?
I don't think, well, by the end of camp, does that include the preseason games?
Yes. Apparently, and I didn't know this till last year, but apparently training camp goes all the way through the preseason games.
Yeah, so if we're including the preseason work, yes, I think there's definitely a scenario where, I mean, all the guys are going to look the same in practice. They barely get to hit each other. But if he's in games and he shows the most burst, if he's pass blocking at a really consistent level, he's picked up the playbook really quickly, and his talent's just undeniable, I think you would have a hard time denying Damian Pierce the opportunity to start. And really starting might just mean, okay, you're going to get 45% of the carries and the other 55% is going to be split between Rex and Mac. So it doesn't mean, I'm not saying that he could earn his way to 65 or 70% as a featured back, but could he prove himself as the best of the group and start? Absolutely. Do you think so?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean,
oh, you asked if it was possible, not if it was going to happen.
Okay. Oh yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it's possible, because I've seen it happen before where a team has a rookie running back and, you know, they give kind of the old heads a shot, and then by week three, the rookie running back's taking over, and then that's the end of it. And I think that I think when you get to week five, Damian Pierce is going to be the starting running back. I don't think it's going to be November. I think it's going to be, like I said, by week five, they're going to turn over the feature back role to Damian Pierce.
That seems completely feasible. I mean, Pierce has got talent, and he's going to do things that lend itself to getting on the field. Like, I think you and I both expect the Texans could be down in a lot of these contests. That means they're going to have to pass the ball. And Pierce, I mean, part of the reason he really flew up the boards, why he got picked as high as he did on day three, is at the Senior Bowl, he really flashed. And at Florida, he's a great pass protector. So if he's the guy you're going to trust when Davis Mills needs to go into 5 and 7 step dropbacks, you're going to have him on the field. So, yeah, I could absolutely see him taking over sooner rather than later, even if he doesn't open as a starter.
Yeah, and he also kind of got – well, they were chased out of the run at Florida because he had 5.7 yards per carry on 100 carries, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, he just didn't get a lot of work. Just for fun, Mark, I will pick a different – battle, since we both agree this is the most interesting one. I do want to see what they do at slot corner. I think that's very interesting. Desmond King was obviously brought back on the 1-year contract. He was forced to play a lot of outside corner last season that didn't highlight his strength. But now with Derek Stingley and Steven Nelson there to play boundary, King has a very viable path to playing his best football. But at the same time, potentially one of the Texans' most valuable players from last year who flashed was Tavier Thomas. I think Tavier Thomas is going to be fighting to take that nickel spot, and he'll definitely be present on dimes. And then at the same time, you've got Jalen Petrie, who's listed as a safety, and I'm sure he's going to play a lot of different safety roles. But really at Baylor, he played the star, which is a cross between weak side linebacker and nickel corner. So you could have in bigger sets Jalen Petrie playing nickel. So I will say my nerdier little battle I want to watch is who's getting the reps as the third corner.
No, it's a significant battle because I think that's part of the reason why they retain the cornerbacks as they did. And, you know, that's kind of why Lovie Smith's defense has really, I think, grown, is because he's recognized that three wide is reality. So you can play the Tampa 2 all you want. You need somebody that's got to play the slot.
Mm-hmm. No, you have to have a viable nickel corner in today's league. And the Texans, I will say, something nice. Last year, they didn't have enough corners. This year, it does feel like with Stingley automatically occupying a position and Steven Nelson being a pretty firm signing for a second corner, they have a gluttony of guys to play in the nickel and dime packages. But we got to figure out who's going to play more, and King versus Tavier is spicy. And then Jalen Petrie, you just get even more flexibility.
Yeah, and I think the defense is going to be dangerous the more flexible versatile that Jalen Petrie is. I don't know that you see it in year one, but...
Well, it's all about how Lovie calls the game, yeah. Right?
And he is. He's going to be wearing the headsets and everything because he said, hey, why is it offensive coaches are having all the fun? You don't see
honestly
defensive coaches doing it. So that's why he's doing it.
I respect him for doing that. I kind of love that he's doing it. It's very, very old school.
Yes. Well, to start out camp, the Houston Texans put Jordan Jenkins on their physically unable to perform list. And
tier 5.
They what?
I said tier 5.
Oh yeah. Yeah, with the tiers. That was a good listicle that you put out. It was really good.
Thank you.
But Jordan Jenkins, they put him on the physically unable to perform list, but Aaron Wilson from the Pro Football Network reports that they don't expect him to be there very long. And then defensive back Tristan McCollum, and then fifth tight end Tegan Quitoriano, they were to the PUP list. So they'll count on the active roster, but Houston doesn't really have to make a decision regarding those guys until the cut down to 53, the 53-man roster, and they're eligible to just work out, pass the physical, and then they're back out there at practice and off the PUP list, and no biggie. Houston also worked out four running backs in Max Borgi from Washington. They worked out Cyrus Habibi Lekio, who is also an undrafted free agent from Boise State, Artavis Pierce, who was with the Bears last season, and then former Rice Owl and Crosby High School product, Austin Walter. They worked out those four guys. So, John, I guess a two-topic, two-parter. You concerned about any of the guys on the PUP list? And then, I mean, first of all, I think that's actually a pretty good PUP list. Just those three guys. And there's Jalen Petrie on the PUP list. You know, it's kind of three guys that are kind of role players or struggling to make the team.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems like we're really healthy right now, so I'll take this in two parts. In terms of the pup list, I think that Jenkins and Katoriano are both essentially locks to make the team, so I'm not worried about them missing time. I would have liked to have seen what Keegan wait, is it Tegan Katoriano? Yes. Not Keegan Tetoriano. I digress. I would have liked to have him to gotten more time because I did think there was a viable path for him playing as the second tight end, the blocking tight end in those two tight end sets. But really, that position group's all about Brevin Jordan. I'm not convinced. I mean, he's a sixth-round pick that he'd be a significantly better blocker than the next guy on the roster. And then Jordan Jenkins, I joked tier five when you brought his name up. I don't think he's the fifth best edge rusher on the team even. So, I mean, I'm just really thrilled that Derek Stingley's not on there. I think the Texans got off pretty dang well about their physically unable to perform list. And then for the running backs, Mark, I'll let you talk about this. I just don't care. That room feels pretty settled to me. I only know one of those names, and I'm a football junkie. So when I see a list like that, I kind of tune out. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they were just taking a look at what's out there and how it compares to what's on the roster and just who's available in case you run into some injury issues or guys aren't picking up the system or you just want to see what, you know, you thought of Max Borgie now that Indianapolis let him go a week after rookie minicamp. I think this is just kind of seeing what's out there, making plans for all of the cut down days and just kicking the tires on some guys, especially when you look at Austin Walter, because this has kind of been a theme of this offseason when it's come to young players, is Houston had, well, it's not just young players, it's some of the old guys too, like Jerry Hughes, but Houston, they've kind of made it a priority to get some of the just Houston area high school football players and bring them through the system. Like I said, whether it's Jalen Petrie, who I could write an article about, he used his blinker and when he merged and onto I-69, and then that gets 100 shares. Or, like, you know, Jerry Hughes, he's another Houston area high school football product. And so I think that's what they were doing, is just seeing, hey, what's another Houston area high school football legend? What's he still got to contribute? And that's why they worked out Walter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with what they're doing about the Houston collective. I can't see any of these guys making an impact on winning. So I'm ready for football that matters, Mark.
Well, it matters, and it matters. Friday morning, 7:30, Nick Caserio press conference.
Oh, Mark, I got a topic for you. That's not.
No,
on
I got
list.
It. What is it?
Do you think that Nick Caserio says anything interesting, or that we learn anything tomorrow? Or do you think we're going to get a bunch of fluff about how the team has improved and he's excited?
No, I think that Nick Caserio is a lot like Brave New World, the dystopian novel by Aldous Huxley. Now, in that particular world, most Americans are familiar with 1984, with Big Brother and truth being suppressed. But in Brave New World, the establishment mixed truth with trivial and meaningless messages. So I think he's going to say something. I don't think the Caserio whispering has gotten to the point to be able to find what he's saying. But amid those, you know, 1,000-word answers he gives, I think there's truth in there. You just got to find it. So I think he'll say something, but it's just going to take a little bit of parsing through it. And that's what makes it exciting, you know. I think it's a lot better approach than just getting adversarial with someone asking a question.
It's fair. Mark, you talk in a lot of metaphors, usually food, and that might have been the most veiled out there. It wasn't even a metaphor, just the comparison that you've ever made. That was a tough one to follow.
Yeah. Well, what I should have said was it's actually going to be like a buffet where Nick Caserio offers just this home-style buffet and you're ravenous, so you're not really observing what's on the smorgasbord. It's like, oh, look, there's rotisserie chicken, and they've got peach cobbler over here, and there's steamed French-style green beans, and you're not really thinking of what you're putting on your plate, and then you miss a dish that you would have absolutely demolished any other time, like the mozzarella sticks in a cup of marinara sauce.
That was profound. That was truly profound. And I think this is a good lead-in, because if Nick Caserio's press conference is going to be a bit of a non-story, although we're gonna get some tasty quotes. There'll be some stuff we write articles about, but what's the biggest storyline that we're going to see in the first week of Texans training camp?
I think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be Garrett Wallow. That's what I think.
Oh, say more. Say more about that.
What?
Oh, just I'll expound. Why?
Well, because, yeah, again, when I talked about the Nick Caserio whispering, he was somebody whose name was just brought up for no reason throughout interviews this offseason. And same thing, Lovie Smith would reference him too. So I think that they're going to be talking about Garrett Wallow a little bit more as a viable contributor, one of the top five linebackers, you know, on the defense. So I think it's the youth movement.
That'd be a positive development. That'd be good.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to take the easy out. I think it's going to be Davis Mills.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I just think it's going to be over-the-top praise. I think he's going to have a command of the offense. I think he's going to have respect from the quarterback room. I think there's going to be really obvious cohesion between him and Pep Hamilton, between him, Brandon Cooks, and Nico Collins. I just expect a wave of, hey, the Texans, they've got a quarterback this year, and we don't know how it'll go, but I think the noise is going to be extremely, extremely positive.
Yeah, I can see that happening where there's so much Davis Mills praise and everything, and then people are getting kind of a skewed perception of him. And then once he gets out there in the first 3 weeks of the season, and then he's getting, you know, rushed up the middle and then sack fumble or chucks an interception, then it's really going to open people's eyes to what they've really got with Davis Mills. But, you know, I still think that he's got a really good shot to try to make the case. Hey, don't go looking for a first-round pick this year. And, you know, we got it. Go get Will Anderson instead, okay? And just ignore C.J. Stroud.
He has got the full support of the organization and a offense that is designed for him to succeed. And he's as talented, at least on paper, as they come. He's got the size. He's got the arm. He's got the mechanics. I think he reads the field really well. Can he put it all together and win and just consistently make good plays at the NFL level? And my guess is in training camp, where the really hard things aren't tested, it's just going to be a lot of overwhelming positivity.
Yeah, by the way, friendly reminder, folks, they don't hit until the second week of camp. because this first week is going to be ramp up. So it's going to be basically extended OTAs, and then it won't be until the second week of training camp, about the fifth practice, where they put on pads and start popping each other. So take that into account as well when it comes to some of these practice reports.
So you're telling me we're not going to see any Jalen Petrie big hits tomorrow?
You might, but you might get some screaming afterwards from Pep Hamilton.
It won't be allowed. Also, Mark, you tell the audience our announcement about August.
Yeah, so we're going to go to Texans training camp. Looking forward to it. And, we'll be there at Houston Methodist Training Center. And for the first time, I'll get to see someone who's been writing for the Texans Wire since 2019. So that'll be fun.
It is crazy I have been here that long. I feel like I didn't get to know you super duper well till the last, 16 months. But, wow. I've been writing here a while. And finally, we're going to have boots on the ground at Texans training camp. I am so excited to provide live coverage of practice on those days. And it's just a great opportunity. It's going to be great for the site, too.
Yeah, it definitely will. And I remember Katie Drummond from Cowboys Wire. He sent me a message. It was basically during that third preseason game. I was actually in Illinois with my mom so she could see her sisters. And I got a DM from him. And he said, "Hey, I got a free agent here. Would you be interested?" And he said, "You're a really good film guy." That's what he said.
That's what I did. That's what I love to do. That's kind of how I got my start. I only did film breakdown for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things KD Drummond does is he's got a really good staff at Cowboys Wire. And, across the wires, you got your different personalities. Cam DeSilva, for example, for the Rams Wire. He's so good at generating content. It's like he's the only person in the Rams media. Oh, well, you got Sam Farmer from the LA Times, but you know what I mean. That's just consistently putting stuff out there and covering the team. And then you got, like I said, you got the KD Drummond approach where you've got this 25 people staff that's just taking care of stuff and churning it out. Yeah. And then you got you and me, it's kind of like,
I think we also got to tell, the story with truth to the audience. It was not a free agent situation. It was really like a, I was about to be thrown overboard off the ship because I've been riding there for over a year, close to 2 years and a year and a half. I'd done one full season and another draft. And I continued to misspell Ezekiel Elliott's name. I didn't know players on the roster. And he was like, "If you just don't care, I can't have you here." He's like, "I see you tweet about the Texans a lot. Do you want me to reach out to Mark?" And Mark, I don't know if you remember this, but at first I think you said no. I don't think I heard again until a week and a half or 2 weeks later. And then KD was like, "Actually, he'll take you." And I was like, "Oh, sweet."
Yeah. Well, I know that it's turned out for the best. Yeah. Well, I can't. So you're misspelling their names, huh? Yeah, that's usually a telltale sign.
Hey, I was a rising senior in college. I was trying to get into medical school. I just could not expend any effort that I really just didn't have at that point to a team that I was not interested in. I was like the opposite of you. I was covering the Cowboys, but I was really interested in the Texans. So, yeah, no, definitely embarrassing. Not my best work. But clearly God had a plan for it. I would agree. Worked out for the best.
I got to be honest with you. Covering two NFL teams is actually pretty cool because you can use one. It's really, and you would understand this being in medical school, you've basically got your control group. So when people and fans and colleagues say all this outrageous stuff about one, you can say, oh, look, in the control group, the same thing's happening. So maybe that's the NFL, and you just need to chill out. So I like I said, I like it. I like having the control group.
Hey, you're great at it. You do as good as anyone covering both teams,
Mark. All right, we're focused on today, or Friday, or whatever. The first day of training camp. That's what we're focused on.
Texans. All right, Mark, where can they find you on Twitter?
Real Mark Lane. Find the Texans Wire at the Texans Wire. Make TexansWire.USAToday.com your homepage. Follow John Crumpler at John H. Crumpler. And it's here. We made it. I can't wait for all the newses. I can't wait, John.
It's going to be a great day tomorrow. And with that said, have a good morning, everybody.